I don't know if you've noticed, Adam, but now that we've moved to a video chat system to record our podcasts remotely, did you notice that I have to admit you to the room? You can't just join the room. I'm here first, and then a little thing shows up, says, allow this person in, Adam, and I say, yes, I admit him, and then you join. I don't know if you've noticed that that's the dynamic, but I just thought I'd point it out if you hadn't noticed it.
No, I haven't noticed that. That kind of stuff is beneath me. And not on my radar.
You hadn't noticed, it's not on your radar, you hadn't noticed. Yeah, not very observant, maybe.
No, but it's interesting that it is on your radar and you also feel the need to remind someone that that's the thing that's going on.
As no, if I it wouldn't has remind any anybody else. Nobody else, just specifically you. I just wanted you to know that I have admitted you to this room, that's all.
You don't just want me, you want the listener to know.
I don't believe in the listener. I'm not interested in the listener. I'm only interested in you in this room. And I just wanted you to know that I have admitted you to the room that you're in. That's all that is. That's all that is. And I believe actually today another man has admitted you to another room, a more physical room. Is that the case?
Yeah, I'm in a new space. It's 2 weeks on the trot and I'm in new spaces. I'm in Radio Dan's room. because of factors, you're in the midst of a move, if I may be so bold. Our usual record time has been compromised, and you know you can only do certain times. 7 p.m. Now I can't do 7 p.m. from my house.
No,
because
kids dad. Get put,
I'm a dad. You know, no big deal. Very small flat, no space to do it.
Yeah.
Also Thursday, that's my day at home. That's when I look after the kids, I pick them up, etc.
That's today.
So I couldn't do my other place. I won't say what that is. I think people could figure it out. So what was I going to do? I know Radio Dan. He's got a shed in his garden. And I thought, oh. Wow. I'll ask. And he said, yeah, of course.
Wow. Radio Dan has saved the day, possibly for the first time ever in history. You know,
you want to go in hard on Radio Dan, but
no, I don't want to go in hard on Radio Dan. I just want to point out that radio is a dying format. That's all. That's
well, he's not the way he's going about it.
What's he doing?
Well, he's saving radio day by day.
Is he actually?
I mean, I don't listen to him, to the stuff he... that he does, but I, you know, no. It's a going concern. It's doing very well.
Is it?
He knows his onions.
Well, he's got a shed. I mean, you know, we'd have to be going well enough to invest in a shed.
Yeah, he's doing better than me.
Right.
He's nicer than me. He's better than me. And he's also...
He's got the word radio as a prefix to his name. That's
well,
better than you.
I mean, yeah.
What would you be called? Sub-editor Adam?
Great. Can you tell the listener what's happened and what this episode should have been?
I can, yeah.
Go on, tell everyone what happened.
Well, the thing is...
You admitted me into the room, and now I'm pointing my finger at you and saying, do you want to explain what the fuck happened today?
Yeah.
Because I watched the movie. I watched the movie we were supposed to do.
Well, this episode was supposed to be the O Brother, Where Art Thou episode. As listeners who completed last week's episode would know, it was Adam got me on it. I've only seen it the once many years ago. I really didn't enjoy it, and so I was actually quite excited to sit down and watch it. And last night, that's what I tried to do, Adam, only to find out, and you were no help. You didn't tell me. You gave me no fair warning. Hey, how about that? If it would have been vice versa, role reversal, I would have sent you, I would have shot you, would have thought, oh, I should warn Joe. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is available nowhere online, essentially. Nowhere legal online, I should point out. Now, unfortunately, I'm between homes at the moment, and while I do own it on DVD, it's packed away deep in a storage vault somewhere outside of London, so I can't use it. And I only found that out really late last night, and then I called you at 10:30 to the chagrin of your wife, I think.
She was so pissed off.
She was very upset about that late call time, wasn't she? Just to be clear, it was a mobile phone call. It wasn't like I called the landline or anything.
We don't have a landline. Yeah,
no, I just want to say, like, I don't, you know, it's not my responsibility that she... No, but it felt like it. It felt like it on the call. I'll say that. It felt like I'd done something wrong. I was like, I've just called my friend. It's 10:30. What are you talking about? There's no cutoff in the world of mobile phones. You either answer or you don't. If you haven't put it on silent, it's your fault, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But she was livid. And it was really funny to me because I didn't care either way. but yeah, it was real. I actually hadn't seen that side of her.
It was weird, man. It was dark, you know?
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host. And Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Can I tell you the joke I accidentally made?
Yeah.
When I was watching Oh Brother Where Art Thou?
Yes, please.
It looks gorgeous, and I took a couple of photos of a moment. And it's from behind, it's in a cinema, and you can't really tell what's going on, but it looks gorgeous. And I posted that on my Instagram stories, @errorofways.
Error, not error.
That's also my letterboxed handle if you want to follow me there.
Error, not error.
If you want Simpsons stuff, follow me on Letterboxd. I've got loads of, I share lots of lovely little Simpsons quotes, lots of Simpsons clips these days.
Do you?
Yeah.
On Letterboxd?
Yeah. No, sorry, on Instagram.
I was going to say, why are you sharing Simpsons clips on?
So I post the picture and I say, guess the flick.
Uh-huh.
That's it, because I'm like, I haven't been making collages in a while. I've been writing my screenplay. I haven't been expressing that I'm actually making stuff. So I need to fill the void. So I do that. And, later on, someone replies to my story. Oh, brother, where art thou? And I see that and I go, oh, hello, I've got a joke here. And I said, oh, I'm just on the toilet, actually, having a poo or something stupid. And then that's it. Boom. Joke. And the guy was like, ah, ha, ha, nice one. And then later that evening, someone said, replied to the story, oh, brother, where art thou? And I went, just watching telly. What about you? I was like, oh, that was just absolutely, I'd accidentally opened the door to just a lovely little joke. And now
that's,
I think,
really
I'm just going to start posting stills from Oh Brother Where Art Thou, saying guess the still to see how many people I can reel in.
That's good.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
I do like that. Yeah, it reminds me of that knock knock joke, you know, where say knock knock.
Who's there?
Me.
Me who?
How's it going? You all right? You know. Anyway, sorry I didn't watch the film, but I have watched other films, Adam.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast. This is the show where we chat about the movies or films.
Wait, who are you? You didn't say who you were.
I'm not always going to be able to do it exactly the same way.
You say, I can do it exactly the same way like you do it. Hold on, let me do it for you. You ready? Ready? You got it. This, you go, hello. You
not
say
always,
it like that.
Not always like that.
Sometimes.
No. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond. You say it like that. You go, Adam Richmond. Joining me as ever is Leaky Bucket Boy. I miss it when you call me the Leaky Bucket Boy. Can you do it again?
Actually, I do have, I've got a little, because I was listening back to some old episodes. There we go. Okay, so hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast, the show where we chat about the movies or films that we forgot about, we forgot we'd even seen in the first place.
Hi.
Here he is. This is my co-host, of course. It's Mr. Joe Devine. He's shit with memory, but he's great with the passage of time.
Yeah, that's nice.
Hello.
Like that. Hello. How's it going?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks.
Great.
I'm annoyed because I watched a film for the show and then it turned out that we wouldn't get to chat about it. And
that's
so
good. That's like your character, isn't it? That's like in a bad film, you would say, a character would introduce themselves for the first time and you'd say, hi, who are you? And they'd say, hi, I'm Brad. And I'm annoyed because my brother has a better job than me. And then that's their motivation for the whole film, you know? That's just a bit like you. Hi, I'm Adam. I'm annoyed.
Yeah, I mean, today was supposed to be all me. You know, Thursday,
right?
It's all me. But then it turned out I had to watch a movie, and I didn't want to watch a movie,
right?
Because you know, I didn't really have anything else to talk about other than the movie I've watched. But I'm coming in with that energy. Joe insisted I watch Baby Girl.
Well, you know,
which we'll get to later, maybe.
When we discovered that we couldn't watch Where Brother, Oh, Where Art Thou, Brother?
Where Brother,
Out Where there. Brother, Where Brother, Oh, Art Thou? You said to me, and I quote, and this was at 11 p.m. last night. You said, "Watch any." All caps, any film, any,
yeah.
And I will watch it tomorrow. And so I thought long and hard about what to choose. I suggested Jackie Brown, because I know that we both agree that's a forgotten movie, but it was a little too long for us to both squeeze in. So instead I started to look for something shorter, and I was kind. There were other things I could have chosen that you definitely would not have wanted to watch. So
like
I thought
what?
Baby Girl, maybe. I can't remember what they were now. But Baby Girl, I thought it's A24, it's Nicole Kidman, we can talk about it. And I thought, to be honest, I thought you'd be up for it.
No. And as soon as you said, oh, I've watched Baby Girl, I really don't want to watch that at all.
Well, we can talk about it later on.
Okay. But so what, and we'll talk about what movie I chose to watch instead.
Yeah.
But we have watched a movie, a new movie.
Yeah.
That I saw, and then I said, oh, you should watch this. And it's The Ballad of Wallace Island.
Right. The Wallace of Ballad Island. That's right. Yeah.
Starring Tim Key and Tom Basden, and written by them as well.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do the letterbox for The Ballad of Wallace Island because it's not canon to the podcast.
I think you should do it anyway, though. It's good to acknowledge that it's not canon. Or I'll tell you what we could do. If you want, because it's not canon, I could read the IMDb.
Yeah, I mean, it would just feel like I'm not doing it because I didn't like the movie, and I did I did really like the movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, let me do it. Like, that's the format.
That's it. That's if you ever want Adam to do something, you just have to say, or I could do it, and then he goes, no, I got it, I'll do it.
No. This is done really well, by the way. It's been on at the cinema, certainly in London, for quite some time.
Yeah.
Richard Curtis reportedly was at a screening, and, you know, he went over and he said it was fantastic. It's right in his wheelhouse.
I mean, it is in Curtis's wheelhouse, isn't it? Yeah.
Directed by James Griffiths, 100 Mins.
Who's James Griffiths, by the way? Has he done other stuff I would know or no?
I don't think so. Maybe Telly. Oh, dear. He directed Cuban Fury, starring Nick Frost.
I did watch that. I thought it was fine. I thought film was absolutely fine. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't bad.
It looks bad.
Right. No, I get that, but it's not bad.
Okay, but look at the poster for Cuban Fury. It's got All's Fair in Love and Salsa. Beneath Bruce Garrett's underconfident, overweight exterior, the passionate heart of a salsa king lies dormant. Lies dormant. Now, one woman is about to reignite his Latin fire. I mean, how and who decided to make that as a movie?
How and who? The owl said to the mole.
Anyway.
Who and when? The mole said to the badger.
It's got Chris O'Dowd, Rashida Jones, and Nick Frost, who...
Yeah. You're talking about Cuban Fury.
Cuban Fury.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he directed that. But I was just trying to lay it on thick like that. What is that movie?
Right.
It's so dumb.
I mean, it's not bad. It's absolutely fine.
It sounds like a shit version of Blades of Glory without the spoofery.
Yeah. No, that's pretty much it.
Great. Okay, so here's the letterbox. 100 mins. I'd say 10 mins too long. Ballad?
I think it's 5 mins too long.
Great. He's getting the band back together. An eccentric lottery winner, played by Tim Key, who lives alone on a remote island, tries to make his fantasies come true by getting his favourite musicians, Tom Basden and Carey Mulligan, to perform at his home. That's it. It's based on the short film, not of the same name.
Right.
That Basden and Key made over a decade ago, I think.
It's called Not of the Same Name.
Yeah, I know.
Wow, that's weird.
Would you believe it? I remember watching it, of course. I was a massive Basden Key fan.
Did you watch it?
Back in the day. Oh, yeah, I can't remember it, but I watched it when it came out because they were in a sketch troupe called Cowards, they're great, them and two other guys. Very funny. Tim Key and Basden, the poetry stuff they do, hilarious. And so, yeah, they've just been chipping away, and like 10 years later they finally get to make it as a movie. It's very creatively inspirational. It's a great inspirational make your movie story. I think, you know,
yeah, just that's if you can, true, and it's right in your emotional center, or at least it's canonical for you in your life.
You're
a big fan of these guys, you watched the short, and then they made a movie out of it 10 years later. I mean, that I would say that's probably makes it more meaningful to you than to many audiences.
No, I mean, that's the thing. Like, by the time this came out, actually, I wasn't really fussed about it. I still really like Tim Key and his stand-up. He's very funny. He's great when he's on with Partridge.
But you've moved on.
Well, no, but like Basden is in that rubbish Ricky Gervais TV show.
Is he?
Yeah.
Who does he play in that? Afterlife?
Yeah, he's the he's just the awkward guy.
He's one of those people.
But he's he's a jobbing actor. He needs stuff.
Yeah, but you know, I feel like being in Afterlife is the equivalent of being a journalist and working for the Daily Mail. You know, it's like you can do it if you need a job, but seriously, you can't be upset when someone gives you shit for it.
Right, but I'm not giving him shit for it. I'm just like that's in my. They're less pristine.
Sure.
And Tim Key's in that new Office remake called The Paper.
Is he?
Yeah.
Has he got a big recurring role, or is
he's,
it?
He's in the trailer. And he was also in Bong Joon-ho's film, Mickey 17.
Yeah.
So baffling, because when he's great, he makes sense, but he does not. I mean, that film's an absolute shambles, but I found it just threw me for a loop to go, why is Tim Key in this movie? It's like when I see Richard Ayoade in a movie. I don't want you there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, whenever you see Richard Ayoade in a movie, it's either because the American who directed it like loves European comedy and wants to get Richard, he wants to sort of show Richard Ayoade, I can get this guy in there. Or, I don't know, it's because of some cineast reason. I was going to say, I wonder if the reason that Tim Key is getting all this work is because people are huge fans of Taskmaster and they are confusing him for Alex Horn, you know?
Those American people, they're super nerdy comedy fans and they'll know Partridge. And
sure.
You know, they're not stupid. But so when did you watch this flick?
Well, I'm going to tell you, Adam, I did something with this flick that I've only ever done once before, which was to watch it
All the way through,
and then immediately watch it again the next day with my wife.
I love it.
Pretty good, right? And it's not that. And now this time round, the first time that was with the film American Fiction, which you might remember from a couple of years ago, which I still think is an excellent film. But I think it's very snoozed on, that movie. That's already become a forgot you forgot for sure. I thought it was great, but or at least it made an impact on me clearly when I watched it the first time around. But this film, part of the reason I watched it again was because I liked it and I thought it's gentle and easy going, and it won't be difficult to watch again. It was mainly because I thought my wife will like this film.
Why had you watched it by yourself? Like, surely that's going to be a slam dunk with the wife on the first viewing. And didn't I promise that you'd have sex with your wife after you watched it? Or was that another movie? I said if you watched Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, that's with your wife, you'd get out chops.
Yeah, great. Luckily, it's not available anywhere on the internet, so I'm just going to commit to celibacy. I watched it without my wife because I was on a timeline. Now, this is the thing I haven't mentioned to you. I did do the Wallace of Ballad Island for my private movie club with my friend Paul. And I know you don't like to talk about films that I've already talked about with Paul.
This is absolutely unbelievable.
I didn't mention it until now.
Not only did you not watch the film, you're now bringing your like regurgitated dog's mess.
Yeah.
To me, like it's fresh.
It is fresh. It's come out of me really recently, you know. But I was on a bit of a deadline.
If you say one thing to me that you said to Paul,
right,
or if I say one thing that Paul said to you,
that you, there's no worry of that. That's fine.
I just want to make sure. I know this is be part of the game, right?
Sure. Yeah.
You can just go ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
You fucked it, Richmond. Paul already said it.
You want to play? Yeah. You want to play the Paul Minefield card? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, let's play it. Let's play Ansorge Minefields. Let's do it. Let's do it. Okay, fine. What did you think of the film?
No,
did you like the film?
No, I want you first to say you're promising to say only new things.
I swear to God. I swear to the Christian God in the sky.
Okay, so now
who I don't believe in.
Great, okay, fine. So did I like this movie? Yeah, no, I really like this movie. Very
ding,
watchable.
Ding, 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 ding. Unfortunately, you've lost the game already. Paul Ansorge also said that he liked the film.
No, so, but I said I really liked it.
He said he really liked it as well.
No, I only said I liked it.
Do you want to hear what our movie club score was?
Do you need to explain the score to the listeners?
Yeah, I can do. If you want to hear it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a huge amount to say about this flick, to be honest.
Well, here's how the scoring system works for Movie Club. The fun thing about it is that it's kind of subjective, right? Like, even the definition of it I'm about to give you now is sort of malleable, flexible to a certain extent. The Movie Club score is, first thing to say, it's out of 100, okay? That gives us extra space in which to investigate. It is supposed to be a combination of how good you thought the film was, critically speaking and sort of objectively speaking, but then a weightier portion is given to your experience of it and how much you liked it, right? And because Paul and I are just movie collaborators, and there's no competition to it, we have one Movie Club score at the end, which we record, which is the median, the average between our two scores. So if I said 40 and he said 80, 60 is the Movie Club score.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You seem particularly to stress the note that you and Paul, your best friend Paul, your good buddy Paul, that you're movie collaborators.
Yes. Yeah.
It seems quite pointed. So you and me, like what?
I would term us as movie competitors, I would say.
Right, so you're Nazi Germany and I'm the Allies.
Well, no, I was thinking more that you're okay. Japan
right.
and I'm China, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
you've tried to invade me a few times and occasionally you've been successful, but I'm very good at rebuffing and long term, you're absolutely fucked. Your economy's going to collapse. Don't even get me started on your population pyramid.
But yeah, that's all my energy, is it? Or take any responsibility for that?
In a sense, we collaborate on our competition. You could put it that way. You could say that we're both equal parts conflicting.
We're a Cold War, okay? We're Russia and America in the 1950s. We both kind of want it to sustain at a certain level.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, it's powering the economies, you know. I mean, I've got Henry Ford, you've got Chairman Mao.
Yeah, and
I'm making cars at an astonishing rate. Now, do you want to know what the Movie Club score was?
Just the total.
How about this? I'd love you to guess the Movie Club score that the Wallace of Ballad Island finally got. In order to give you some context, I'm going to throw a couple of other Movie Club scores at you. So I'll say the film Pride, for example. Paul and I love the film Pride.
90.
It got 93 out of 100. Yes. And this is the thing about the Movie Club score. It's about a feeling. Usually you'll find that...
You've already said that. You're repeating yourself.
No, I know. But usually you'll find that a number will just come to you and it will feel right, you know? So, for example, with the film JFK, the number 87 just felt right. And that's why it got an 87.
I would have said 73, but okay.
Titanic.
59.
Now, Titanic originally got 34, but after some time, we rescore our films as well. And Titanic has gone plummeted down to 22. We actually agree that's a terrible, terrible film.
Yeah, okay.
And then one final one to give you some sense of things. The film... And we've done quite a lot of good ones recently. Oh, the film The Wedding Singer with Adam Sandler, that got 73. So what do you think, based on that context, The Wallace of Ballad Island got?
78.
Oh no, sir, it got a very, very high score.
Really?
It got a 95.
Fucking hell, man, you've absolutely so misscored that.
You think we've misscored it?
Well, no, that's how you felt, but you're...
Now you've got stuff to say. Go, why is that a misscore?
Well, no, because I'm not going to say... It's not a misscore. Like, that's how you felt. It's great that you loved it that much, that you both loved it that much. I absolutely know
that's what you're saying, but I'd love, if the feeling of that number is so high for you, what number do you feel, and why is it lower than that?
It's so hard to make a movie and write a script. It just works. And Ballad just works.
It sings.
It's such a good script.
Yeah.
Everything fits. There's lovely performances. There's some lovely jokes. It's really well performed.
The husband character kind of sucks.
I'd read that before, but he totally before I watched the flick. But I think he's really. So this is where the writing shows, and that character, you need that character there, and that he sucks. And if he sucks because it's a structural demand of the screenplay.
That's why he sucks, I think.
But so then I don't think you can take those two things. You can't then say it's a 95. But like, also just doing that, like making a movie that hits all those beats is so difficult. I'm not criticizing this film, and it does everything. It's if you ran it through a kind of a structure checker, and like in terms of like where the midpoint's supposed to be, and when the character's supposed to fall out, and when the turn happens, it's just going to hit all those things, and it does it very artfully. It does it very...
So where's the fall off?
The fall off is it just... Because I'm watching a movie that I can... I'm just like, I know I've watched too many movies. Everything happens where it's supposed to happen. I was never surprised. The film never took me anywhere that I didn't know it was going to take me. It did it very, very well. It's so rare, and I will repeat myself on this point because I don't want anyone to come and get me. I'm not miserable. It's so difficult to do that. And I think that's why people have really responded to this film and really liked it. Because a lot of people, they'll go to the cinema like once a year, and I'm not judging them. That's what they'll do. And if they see a movie like this, they'll love it.
That's very fair. It's exactly what it's supposed to be, which to you, therefore, isn't surprising. And I think that's a very fair criticism.
But that's not a criticism. That's just why it could never be a 95.
That's a criticism. That's not a criticism. It's a personal criticism, right?
No, it's not a criticism. I'm not criticizing the film. I'm saying that's like why, because your score is...
When I say the word critical, I mean it in like an intellectual academic sense. Like, okay, it's part of a critique. It's not like a you're not shitting on it. It's part of your critique of the film.
It's just why it won't get me. Like, it didn't take me to the After Sun heights. And of course, ever since I saw After Sun is always going to be very difficult for a movie to do that, because that's art, and then this isn't art.
I would say no. I agree with that. I think this is exactly what it's supposed to be, and it's a really, like, execution wise, it's a really, really, really good version of that. There's one moment in the film that did surprise me, that maybe, I don't know if you would necessarily pick that out of a hat. But there's a scene, and this is a spoiler now, so if you haven't seen the film, maybe just skip forwards 1 minute and we won't talk about it any longer than that. There's the scene where Tom Basden, he misunderstands or doesn't. You know, he reads the signals into what Carey Mulligan's saying. He essentially propositions her to go on tour and get back together. And she says no, and she says it in a kind of, I'm just here for the music way. I think that's an interesting part of the film, because as a viewer, I read the situation exactly the same way that the Tom Basden character does. Like, she's spent the entire day sort of indicating that maybe she'd be interested in that. And I think that's one of the reasons the film is good, because it allows for that nuance. It says that this probably was happening. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. It's not really important. What she then says is the important thing, which is, no, I came here for the music. Normal films stay with him after that. They stay with him. He's sad about what's happened. She's the tertiary character. She's the one that's just caused the impact on him. And then, you know, you watch him be sad about it. This film goes with her to her bedroom. And I've never seen a film do that before. Like it follows the secondary character. It follows her perspective out of the room. And it gives you a completely different viewpoint of what just happened than you were expecting. Like, so that part of the film did surprise me. It's a very small thing, but I remember being very surprised about that the first time I watched it.
Well, I mean, they have bagged Carey Mulligan, and the first half of the movie has just been Basden and Key. So you're probably thinking, should we get some more Mulligan on? I don't think there's enough Mulligan in the movie.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
We shat on Mulligan a couple of episodes ago. I mean, right. I did for Never Let
You're
Me
like,
Go.
What's she been doing recently?
What has she been? I need more of her in this.
Yeah.
And I need more of her
she
in the movie.
She should be in this more. You're right. Yeah. Well, mainly I have to say, I thought the Wallace of Ballad Island was fantastic. I can't wait to see.
Yeah.
The Gromit of Ballad Island.
Think for one moment I don't have the balls to send a man out to die. Your instincts are dead wrong. I've no compunction about sending you to your death. But I won't do it on a whim, even with your cavalier attitude towards life.
Real question, actually. I actually don't know the answer to this question, Adam.
Yeah.
Will HBO, they won't have the rights to that music, will they? Or will they?
No, Warner Brothers.
But so they're going to make new Harry Potter music. They can't do that. I mean, that music absolutely cuts to the bloody core of Harry Potter, doesn't it? That's so Harry Potter, it's unreal.
Well, it depends. Like, people thought that about, like, the Superman music, and then Hans Zimmer absolutely, you know, destroys John Williams with his score. Although, interestingly, that's what James Gunn did. He brought back John Williams' Superman score for the new Superman.
What does
which
that
is
sound
not,
like?
Da 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 ba 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 ba.
Oh, yeah. Da, 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 da.
But yeah. Hans Zimmer's Man of Steel is one of the great scores of all time. And for me, if you're going to bring anything back, bring back Zimmer.
Sometimes it's not about like the actual quality, though. Sometimes it's about a combination of like passableness and then the branding. You know, if everyone in the world recognizes something as that thing, then usually that means it achieves its comprehension better than if it's really good. Do you know what I mean?
I just think, like, just because, you know, that's a lovely little ditty for Potter and it's over seven flicks and it's stuck in your brain, that doesn't mean that that's the only thing, you know.
It doesn't, of course, but
if you're
just
a kid,
all
you're
I'm saying
start
is
start watching Potter's TV series and there's a lovely little ditty, that's the ditty that'll sit in their brain.
I'm sure that's the case, but I would say incredible capturing of something. There are very few things, I would say, that have been captured by music so well as the Warner Brothers Harry Potter films. It's more than a ditty, my friend. It's a pity ditty. It's absolutely fantastic. Second thing, gool blimey, can you imagine the scale of the task ahead, the pressure on whoever they are going to hire to write the score, the music for this Harry Potter. I mean, that's a real challenge. And one I think most people would fail.
It's not a challenge. None of this is a challenge.
Do you think they'll get Hans Zimmer to do it?
No, he's got bigger fish to fry. Although
Who are they going to get to write the music then?
None of this matters. This is like us talking about who's going to play Bond. It's irrelevant. The whole thing, Potter, carries... It'll be... That's my phone gone. Potter will just carry everything along with it. And if the tune, the ditty isn't as catchy...
Don't call it a ditty, come on.
Da, 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 da. That's a ditty, mate. It's a ditty. It's not Jaws. It's not Back to the Future, mate. It's not Die Hard. It's nothing. It's for
nothing.
Babies.
That's so ridiculous. You're such a child. Right, come on, get on with it.
Okay, listen, you made us do this.
It's for babies.
I don't know. I'm sorry. It's a very magical tune. Mm. John Williams is a master. He's not my master. I'm a Zimmer guy.
Right, yeah.
I'm a beak guy.
You're a Garland guy.
And I'm a Garland. I'm into Jeff Barrow.
You should make a T-shirt next that says, I'm a Garland guy on front, and then on the back it says, I'm a Zimmer guy too, you know.
I think that's implied. I think everyone just they'll know. Yeah.
No one who is a Garland guy is a John Williams guy more than a Zimmer guy.
Of course they're not. That's... Come on!
You got to hand it to Will Williams, though, haven't you? You really do. I know we're going over well trodden ground here, and we've discussed this.
We did a whole Zimmer Williams thing.
You really have to give it to him today. And I record, you know, I'm recording this immediately after work today. I've got maximum respect for Williams. I think our line on it generally is that Zimmer. He touches the art of the universe more often. But John Williams' ability to turn around an absolutely incredible branding theme tune is out of this world.
Yeah. I mean, some people are into art. Other people are into...
Commerce.
Right. So, Joe, just be clear. Yeah. Joe, the listener.
Did you just say titties be clear?
Titties be clear. Titties... Be clear. Yeah. We need to. Joe wants us to discuss the HBO cast list for the Harry Potter TV series because he couldn't watch Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Well, they added new names to it, didn't they?
They added new names. It's very timely. So what I'm going to do, me, the host, I'm going to list actor names and character names.
Okay.
And
okay.
Joe,
what am I doing?
He's either going to make a noise.
Right.
Or he's going to say a word.
So it's like word association, but played with the cast list of Harry Potter.
Right. And then at the end of that, we'll talk a bit more broadly.
Okay.
And we'll dip in and dip out.
Yeah. Wait. Can I get practice? Can you start me off, kick me off with some stuff that isn't Harry Potter related so I can practice associating?
Okay. Well, should we do, I'll name actors for Bond.
Name anything.
Okay. I'm going to name actors... To play James Bond.
Okay, yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Dev Patel.
Yes.
Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Dog.
Harris Dickinson.
Baby girl.
Paul Mescal. Henry Cavill.
Super cunt. Oh, man.
Idris Elba.
Dead.
Daisy Ridley.
Woman. Okay, yep, I'm in it now. That's good. I've got some of the bad stuff out of the way. Let's go.
Okay, we're going to start big. We'll run through the initial one. John Lithgow, Albus Dumbledore.
Did you say Dumbledore?
Oh, sorry, yeah, no, that's a Freudian slip.
You're such a dick.
Albus Dumbledore.
Albus Dumbledore.
Sorry, John Lithgow, I was trying to make a joke where I was trying to think of what the fucking guy, who Ian McKellen plays. Albus Gandalf. I couldn't remember the name of Gandalf. John Lithgow.
I know I'm not doing an association, but there's just something sinister. I've gone sinister. I'm saying it. That's sinister. I think there's something sinister about that guy.
Yeah, Lithgow's super sinister.
Yeah, he's too sinister. You know,
he's fantastic. There's a great Brian De Palma flick called Raising Cain.
Yeah,
I would urge all our listeners and readers to watch that. Lithgow's never been any better
right.
than in that. It's a really...
And he won't be in this.
He's slightly silly, but he plays sinister. He gets yeah. big.
Uh-huh.
Did you never watch Third Rock from the Sun?
Occasionally, yeah, but never seriously, and only when I was young.
He's not sinister in that.
No, that's true. But I think, can I say, actually, the tricky thing with Dumbledore is picking an actor that looks old enough and looks wise enough but won't die. Because, I mean, that literally did happen with Richard Harris during the movies.
It was after the first one. That's very...
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the... Yeah, just they... He was very... They picked a very old guy.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that you need to pick a young enough person that's going to survive for 10 years and still want to work. But also, like, think about that. The normal retirement age for someone is, you know, in their mid-60s. Really, you're not going to want to pick someone who's younger than 60 for Dumbledore. So you're asking someone who's going to work for 10 years, you know, whilst they make all of these seasons or whatever, into their 70s. It's a risky business. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it just goes to show how replaceable Dumbledore was. Like, Gambon steps in. Who do you rate? Do you rate Harris as a Dumbledore or Gambon?
Interestingly, I would say that Harris was kind of the perfect Dumbledore for season one, for the first film, because in the early story, Dumbledore is much
boring.
More omnipotent and relaxed and wise, boring character, whereas Gambon introduces that little bit of slice iron into Dumbledore, something a little frightening to contend with, because there was a toxicity to Dumbledore, wasn't there? There was another side to him, to Albus. And I'm a bit worried that John Lithgow is just too vacant to play Dumbledore. I don't see Lithgow as having a universe of wisdom in his mind in the way that Ian McKellen does, in the way that Gambon could do as Dumbledore, in the way that Sir Patrick Stewart has. You know, I feel as though you need to pick someone who could have all of that. This is not good word association, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. No, I think I wanted to pick up on this because this is the main one. I think you're wrong because I think Lithgow can play both, and I don't think you've seen enough Lithgow.
Okay, yeah. Well, Lithgow, you and me, and we'll watch some more together.
Janet McTeer, Minerva McGonagall, Harry Potter,
yeah,
Harry Potter. No, hang on a sec.
Oh,
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Hoober, yeah. Hoober, Harry Potter, no stirring Hoober into that potion, Harry Potter. Janet McTeer?
Are you done now? I don't know who Janet McTeer is, really, so
great.
I have no opinion.
Here's a tough one. Warwick Davis, Professor Phileas Flitwick.
Did you call him Warwick?
Warwick.
Oh, my good Lord. Warwick Davis. I mean, Warwick Davis played Flitwick in the original film, didn't he?
Yeah, no, of course he did.
Yeah.
That's why that's one. That's a fun one. That's a little bit of fun. Here we go. This is just one word. This is just the sound of a word. Nick Frost, Rubeus Hagrid. Yeah, that's the... Yeah.
I worry about it a lot.
Oh god.
And you know, and let me tell you, I don't want to jump ahead, but one of the announcements today was that Simon Pegg is also in the series.
Hang on. Spoiler alert. Let's look back. Just do a little like
okay.
foreshadowing. Do foreshadowing. Catherine Parkinson.
Yep, fine with that.
Molly Weasley. Is that the mum?
That's the Weasley mother. I'm absolutely fine with that. I think Catherine Parkinson is a fine actor. Although, one thing I will say is that I am noting that there are many, many comedic picks here, and I am worried about the tone. That's my fear, is the tone. Because I think over long seasons, a lot of lifting is required to carry emotional heft, and I'm just not seeing the people here that I think are going to carry that. Because I can tell you something, it's not the fucking kids, okay? It's not going to be the kids. You think about Game of Thrones, sure, you had your light-hearted characters, sure, you had people who had a comedy turn and could bring something to it, and there were surprises in there as well, but there was a lot of fucking dark, dirty work that was done at the forefront. And I'm just worried about... I don't know, I'm worried.
Well, you say that, but comic actors tend to be have the most range.
Yeah, yeah.
And Parkinson, I think she's done. She'll like that character, Molly Weasley. She's played so broadly by what's her name?
Julie Walters.
Julie Walters. When she does,
many
she
apologies, turn, Julie Walters.
She's a comedic actress.
That's true. Listen, the films are quite shit. I'm not. I don't think the films are excellent. I love watching them. I love watching them, and that they mean a lot to me. But like, I don't think they got all the casting right in the films. I'm not saying, hey, these aren't going to be as good as those movies were, because the movies were like, in many ways, were failures, right? But the book.
Oh,
the
that's books. What we need. I needed this context. I thought yeah. you thought the movies were good.
Oh,
because
no, I love them. I absolutely adore them, and I think everyone did a terrific job. But I mean, they're certainly not art. No,
I'm going to skip. We're going to go to. I think this is a great one to speak to your comedic worry. Paul Whitehouse as Argus Filch.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I'm worried about, Adam. Okay, do I like Paul Whitehouse? Sure. Do I think Paul Whitehouse should play Argus Filch? Not really. Why is that, Joe? Well, because I think Argus Filch shouldn't be a complete comedy turn. There's a lot required of that role in the second book. And also, interestingly, I think for people who've just watched the films or haven't read the books that recently, there's a lot more Argus Filch in the books than there is in the films, okay? And I know he's played for laughs in the movies because he's a kind of a funny character. He's played by the same guy who's in Game of Thrones, you know, who
oh, yeah.
I can't remember his name.
Horrible guy. Horrible.
Horrible guy. But I just think...
Sells up his daughters.
I'm seeing a pantomime in my head, and I don't know that I want to watch this thing for... Like, if the Harry Potter films with the original cast were TV series that were made, you know, how many episodes do you think they're going to make a season? 10? Maybe more? 12? Something like that?
No, not 12. I mean, they need to... The kids are going to grow up pretty quickly. They're going to have to rattle out a series a year...
But that's kind of the rate that they do everything at, right? Like, you know.
Not Last of Us. They're fucking dragging their heels on that.
Well, they kind of need to because Bella, whatever her name is too young.
Well, they're switching perspectives for the next series.
Absolutely. I fucking love those games so much, by the way. I would talk about those all day if you let me. But my point is, I worry about watching something that is the tone that this suggests to me.
Do you worry about it, though? I mean,
I worry about it.
The films... A repanto. It's like
yeah, but they're 2.5 hours long.
It's
fine.
Loveys. It's Lovey o'clock. Everyone's like, no, we must do Potter.
Am I going to the cinema once a year to watch them? It's absolutely fine. No big deal. I'm investing 10 weeks into this.
Right. This one is going to be a good luck with this one because mm-hmm. you're going to open up the doors to the culture wars.
Papa Asidu. Yeah, is he American?
No, he's English.
He's English. Fine.
He was in this great sci-fi TV show. Let me just double-check what it's called.
Did you not like my joke?
I didn't get your joke, sorry.
My joke was just that everyone else seems to be upset that he's black, whereas my first thought was to check if he was American or not, you know? That was my joke.
It was just so subtle. No, he was in a great Sky TV series called The Lazarus Project, which was loads of fun. He was really good in that.
Okay. Well, I don't think I've ever seen him act, but I actually think... I'm most supportive of a kind of more radical recasting in this role because there's just absolutely no way that anyone could ever do anything anywhere near as good as Alan Rickman because Alan Rickman absolutely nailed... I mean, Alan Rickman is Snape.
Yeah, I agree. I don't care about the books. We chatted about Bond recasting and I think it came up about like, the idea of a person of colour playing Bond. I don't care. But then, the text of Potter is even more like race is irrelevant. You know, yes. It doesn't matter.
No,
Johnny Flynn, Lucius Malfoy. He started off, I think, a slightly ropier actor, but he's I always liked his music, and he's got stronger and stronger the more he's been in stuff. And
Loved him in The Dig.
Yeah, he looks the part, man.
I don't think he does. Like, that's my only concern.
Blonde. He's young. He's obviously not.
Did you say Bond?
He looks the part.
Oh, I thought you were saying he could be Bond.
He could be Bond, actually. He could.
It would be funny.
He actually plays Ian Fleming in Operation Mincemeat.
Right, there you go.
With Colin Firth and
so
Ian
he could
Fleming.
Be Bond.
Obviously, he could be because he played.
He could be Bond.
He could be Bond.
He could be Bond.
I mean, you know.
He could be Bond.
He could be Bond.
Anyway, all I'll say about Johnny Flynn is a terrific musician, songwriter, guitarist. Loved him in The Dig. Can never get the Detective tune out of my head.
Can't ever get the
Detectorist theme tune out of my head. Very happy for him. I mean, actually, I'm happy for him that he's going to play Lucius Malfoy. Lucius Malfoy is a big character who returns in every story, I think, and has major roles in many of the books. So we're going to see a lot of Johnny Flynn. My fear is, again, Jason Isaacs really made the character his own in the films. Yes, he did. You're shaking your head, but he did. That's the first thing.
Over-egged. He plays it ham.
I know
There's
he plays
so
it ham,
ham.
But that's
panto.
The way that's Movies the way that he makes it his pig, okay? And number two, Johnny Flynn is too young. He is too young. And this is a consistent theme. It's a consistent theme throughout this list. I'm looking at a people who are at a too young Adam Richmond. Okay?
He's not. Flynn's got kids who are basically the same as age as...
He looks too young. He looks the fucking same age as me, mate. He's incredibly attractive and handsome. He looks like he's a 34-year-old man. He's too young.
They'll age him up.
No, yeah, well, then they shouldn't. They should just pick someone who's
fucking older.
No, because
they've got 10 years of this fucking shit to get through. Right, skipping on.
Skip it.
Professor Gilderoy Lockhart, Kit Harington.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine because it's just a one-off bit. I don't care about that
He's,
one.
He is really underrated.
Kit Harington?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah,
they've cast
him because that role is important. Like, the role is just continuously described as like the most handsome guy who all of the people love in the books. You know, they just need. It's almost like a joke casting.
It's not a joke casting. He could just phone it in, or he could. You know, Branagh's pretty good in. Branagh makes that movie.
Branagh is dreadful.
Is he
absolutely dreadful in that film?
Oh, it's the only thing I liked about that movie.
No, he's woefully inept. I mean,
that's the
just
point of the character, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah, you've got me there.
Find him, Midnight. Run, you left.
At least a while.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemy that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
Bustle on because I've got a broad point I want to make.
Okay.
I don't want to interrupt your list. But we get it. You love Kit Harington, okay?
Yeah, okay, we're on that. Okay, fine. Okay, this is the big one. For me, as soon as I saw this, I suddenly became interested in this stupid TV show that I couldn't give a less of a fuck about. As soon as I saw this name, I was like, I am watching. As soon as this character turns up, whatever streamer I have to subscribe to, I'm there. Professor Dolores Umbridge is Keira Knightley. Noise. Make a noise or a word. She's going to absolutely fucking smash it.
Yeah,
Joe,
I mean,
yes or no? Yes or no?
It's not as simple as a yes or no, unfortunately.
Oh,
okay.
Break it down. Come on, this is the big one for me.
Break it down.
Break it down.
Number one. Possibly of three, possibly of two. We'll see how we go. Yeah. Number one. As Keira Knightley has aged, her acting ability has soared. Okay, I believe her in roles in a way that I never did when she was a younger actor. So I believe that she has the craft and the heft to take on Umbridge, which is a difficult role to play, I would say. And Imelda Staunton really, really nailed it. Yeah,
absolutely. She's, I would say, probably... maybe hot on the heels of Rickman.
Right. No, I think that's fair. That's absolutely fair. And she made that character so dislikable that I think Keira Knightley is going to have a hard time achieving the same heights.
We've never seen Knightley play this kind of character.
No.
I think. And I think that is what she's absolutely... I just can't wait. I can't wait for it. Right.
But the most interesting thing I think about this is just that Dolores Umbridge doesn't enter the books until the fifth one. So it's going to be a while before... I mean, it'll be 2032 before we see that.
Well, I'm on the edge of my seat. Let's talk about her Atonement co-star, little Jimmy McElroy's. He's playing Mad-Eye Moody.
Yeah, who shows noise, up in the fourth voice. Book? Oh, Noise, sorry, yeah.
Words.
Too small. He's too small, physically. I saw him in a Crouch End cafe once, and I was like, yeah, you are small. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. He's an absolutely terrific actor, so I'm fine with it.
He's phenomenal. I rewatched... Yeah. Glass, the third flick out of the Unbreakable series, and he's great. He's really great. He's not Brendan Gleeson, but how could you be? He's James McAvoy.
There's heft there.
Okay, we mentioned Nicky Frost, Simon Pegg as Arthur Weasley. Oh, if you could see Joe's face, the listener. Oh, the listener, if you could see his face, Simon Pegg. Simone Le Pegg. One of the great comic actors of our time. If you look at Big Train, Spaced, Pegg is he was my guy for ages. If Garland hadn't come along, it would be Pegg guy.
Really?
Well, like if Pegg then hadn't gone to Hollywood.
Because you like Mission Impossible, don't
you?
No.
I said if then Pegg hadn't done that. If Pegg had stayed in our backyard and hadn't, like,
Our backyard.
But, yeah, no, Pegg is now this transatlantic cruise buddy. You know, he doesn't...
He's pork. Pegg is pork. Yeah, absolutely.
He could do Arthur Weasley.
Man, Arthur Weasley, there's so much there to Arthur Weasley that wasn't there in the films, I'll grant you that. I just can't imagine the combo of Catherine Parkinson and Simone Le Pegg.
They used to be in Big Train together.
I understand, I know.
Oh,
I
sorry,
know.
Sorry. Oh, sorry, sorry.
I'm
sorry.
Saying, okay, like, what is this? What is this? Oh, it's the Weasleys. Just get a little pantomime going. It's all silly. It's all funny. It's all fucking lightweight, hollow, shallow, nothing bullshit. Like, where's the emotional core here? These, by the way, are the people who Harry wishes were his parents, right? Like, it matters that they are something, that they mean something. Simon Pegg is not a good actor.
No,
he isn't. He's a not. Terrific comedy performer, okay? But not even really anymore, okay? I hate to say it. I hate to say it. I don't hate to say it. I don't enjoy to say it, but I don't hate to say it. I'm so angry about this one. I really am.
And really? Also, I am,
because I just think...
What do you just think?
It's just a piss take. It's like, oh, okay, it's going to be shit then. Great. Yeah, good. That's the one. All the others that you said before, and it's not specific to Simon Pegg. Like, I love Big Train. I don't love the Cornetto trilogy, but I think that those guys are great. I even like Nick Frost, right? Like, I'm not against those people, and I just, when they're hitting this thing...
Yeah. Your backyard.
This is my broad point anyway, right? This is my overall broad point. It's part two.
We're not doing the game anymore. Let's
No, the game's finished. Part one is it could never satisfy me, okay? I know that and I own that, and it's not the fault of any of these people, and it's nothing to do with objective nature or reality. It's entirely subjective. It's all about me. Nothing could ever satisfy me in the world of Harry Potter. That's the first thing, okay? The second thing is, on a less... subjective and more objective perspective, I would absolutely love to be proven wrong about my worry and my fear. I would love for these people, and there are enough of them in here, and I've seen enough times in the last 10 years an actor show up in something that you thought, why the hell have they cast them in that, and then prove to you why they've done it, right? Like, I would absolutely love for that to be the case, and I'm certain that because of the maths here, some of these people will do that. I want to feel like I felt when I watched McConaughey in True Detective.
What, for Harry Potter?
No, I don't want to feel the same grittiness. The point is, I'm saying I want to watch that and experience an actor doing something and go, oh, I didn't know you had this gear. I didn't realise this is what you had to offer. I was wrong before. I would absolutely love for that to be the case. I don't think it's going to be with Simon Pegg. I think it could be with some of these other people. And I feel a bit mean, like, it's nothing to do with Simon Pegg. It actually isn't. And he's a fantastic comedian and incredibly successful. And there's a reason that he went to Hollywood. There's a reason that he's in all these films. And he's also a writer and multi-talented and whatever. It matters to me because I think the Weasley characters are so important because Harry grows up as an orphan, and when he discovers this new world, that they are the first adults really that he encounters, where he sees like what a kind of quote normal, loving, caring family should look like, and he wants to be part of it. Right, he's desperate to be part of it. Sure, they're a bit quirky and they're a bit unusual and they're a bit different, but there's a security in those characters. There's an emotional security in them, an unwavering, unmoving emotional security that you see illustrated from parents to children in the case of the Weasleys. It's super, super important for the emotional narrative, the emotional arc of the story. And I just don't believe that Simon Pegg has that gear to show that. Maybe the director and the show will, but I think that's a completely crucial part of Harry Potter. And so it bothers me, even though these Weasley parents, you think they won't have much screen time, they're not that big, they're not a big role, they matter so much. And for the record, I think Catherine Parkinson will be good, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. You look at that cast list and you worry about the tone. Whose hand's on the tiller? How are they going to just make that tone? Seven series?
Yeah.
There'll be seven books.
There'll probably be seven series, but they might do the same thing. They'll just make more episodes, right? Yeah.
But then obviously they get a lot. The humour drains out of them after the first three anyway. It's all just like dreary, dreary, dreary. Yeah.
That's the thing, right? That's what I'm imagining. I think the first one is going to be delightful and fun and magical and playful, and it should be. And the second one should be too, because they're silly and they're preposterous. You know, they're supposed to be enjoyable children's stories. By the time you get to the sixth book, like, it's just grim.
Here is the question. You've opened this little doorway.
Yeah.
When the movies started getting made,
uh-huh,
no one knew how miserable and dark the books were going to get because they hadn't come out.
Yeah.
And so this Potter Philosopher's Stone comes out and it's like, it's fucking snow.
Yeah.
And so everyone's like,
there's a white owl.
It's a white owl. It's like, oh, this is great. And so even then, like, two and three come out and they're still, you can't, everyone knows where it goes because if you haven't read the books, you can see from the horrible green of the sixth and the seventh, you just know it will come. You know, there's the big Ralph Fiennes. Oh, who will be that guy?
I mean, they should just cast Ralph Fiennes again if they know what's good for them.
Who'll be what's the guy with the band, the little Ian Hart character?
Do you mean Lord Voldemort?
No, the guy who's got his head on the back of his head.
Oh, Quirrell.
Quirrell.
We've got a cast for Quirrell already. They have. Yeah, it is Luke Fallon.
Never heard of him. Anyway. So, but now, everyone knows all of that now. You can't make that same sweet, magical first one. And why would you? The whole thing, you just think, what's the point? And then the answer is, well, money. Money.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I'm sure also, I don't know, actually, I hesitate to say this because I was about to say there is enough at stake and there's enough money spent on it and enough good people involved that it will be okay. And then I remembered the Lord of the Rings TV series that Amazon made, the Rings of Power, or whatever it's called, which personally I think is abysmally bad, or at least falls below the minimum requirement for me to not think that it's not bad.
Wait! Stop! pick a soap.
Hey, did you watch Baby Girl?
No, absolutely not. I just, I couldn't bear to put it on. I don't know, like, that movie's got zero appeal to me.
Really?
The trailer looked like it sucked. A former colleague of mine said she thought it was trash. I like sexy films, but if they're done properly. And I got the sense that this wasn't, it's just like not enough. It's just like, I don't want to watch it. It looks so grubby.
It is quite, it's a little grubby, yeah. It's a bit sexy in parts. I thought it was interesting. I think it's kind of a failure, but I will say very briefly that I thought it was interesting because within the first 5 minutes of the film, in fact, the opening scene of the film, you watch Nicole Kidman having sex with her husband and imitating, you assume, an orgasm. And then she rushes off after he drops off to sleep and masturbates in front of pornography, lying face down on the floor. And I have never seen that in a film before. And you see sort of jerking off jokes and gags, mostly played for laughs, almost always with men. I have seen women characters masturbating in films before. I'm not saying it's the first time I've seen that. But there was something about the opening of the film where I thought, okay, you know, like, this is not, it's not just the same as, I don't know, 50 Shades of Grey or something, like the standard comparison of a woman discovering sexuality. It's quite dark, and it's very interesting. It's also, it's a little on the nose in places. Nicole Kidman plays a CEO of a big company, and there are many scenes where you see her giving a talk to the camera and to the shareholders. And so it's a little on the nose in the sense that it is...
The boardroom scene, like in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. And it's, you know, it's like, here's an incredibly powerful woman. We're showing you how powerful she is. And yet she still isn't allowed to control her own sexuality or her own sexual desires. So I think in that sense, like, it's a little on the nose, but it deserves to be, because I think it's a fair representation, reflection of reality. So there are interesting themes, and there are some interesting things explored within it. Harris Dickinson is sort of good in parts, and I feel you can see the charisma. He's got it there. It's sort of weird too, and there are scenes where he's supposed to be being sexy, I think, and it really doesn't feel very sexy. And I don't know, I was a bit confused by that. But generally speaking, I thought it was absolutely fine and like relatively interesting. And I just thought Nicole Kidman deserves a bit of a shout out because she's done so much. I mean, she's very prolific in her work. I think she's done a lot of really good stuff in the last 10 years. And I know it's a Harvey Weinstein film, but the film Lion with Dev Patel in, Nicole Kidman plays the mother who adopts him. She's outrageously good in that film. That's a film full of great performances. She's so wonderful in that film. She's just a terrific, terrific actor. And I'm glad that she, you know, is getting to do stuff like this.
Yeah, and I just think it's great that, you know, you can have a scene like that where a woman pleasures herself for, you know, for a purpose and a point, you know, to show that. But also, I just think men, whenever it's a man jerking off, it's always a joke. You know, it's never a point of power or seriousness, and it's never to underscore like a point, like, oh, he needs to do it because he's being ignored by. Because he's suffering and he's alone. Maybe the closest to a... You don't see Joaquin Phoenix jerk off in Her, but you know... But you see, that's how he gets away with it. It's like, oh, this is... He's a sad, lonely guy. But if he was jerking off, he would be pathetic. So as soon as any man in any movie as soon as he starts jerking off, pathetic. And that's fine. It is pathetic. You know, I've got a VPN.
Stop talking about your VPN.
You just talked about it.
You're constantly talking about your VPN.
Because you just talked about Nicole Kidman frigging herself off. I couldn't, like, you can't drop these little breadcrumbs and, like, I'm going to ignore them.
That's what Mark Ruffalo said in the film Dark Waters. the shit version of Spotlight, you know, Spotlight for Teflon.
You told me to watch Baby Girl. I couldn't bear it. To just watch a movie that I could talk about, the film Dark Water, starring Mark Ruffalo, directed by Todd Haynes, which is all about the Teflon scandal.
Uh-huh.
It's on BBC iPlayer. Let's bang this on. And it's just perfectly fine, but it's so melodramatic. And there are no great acting performances in it at all.
No, none.
And Todd Haynes is not Michael Mann.
No.
Or David Fincher.
No.
Or Steven Soderbergh.
Certainly not.
So it's just...
He's Todd Haynes.
But Todd Haynes, what's really interesting about Dark Water is it's about Teflon, this big DuPont chemical scandal, this big chemical company leaching the stuff that ends up making Teflon, all the runoff into the water, giving people cancer. And this the court case just went on and on for... over 10 years, and it's sort of watchable, given that I had to watch it to say something about a movie. But when you're watching it, I'd seen Todd Haynes has already made an amazing movie about chemicals in our society. It's called Safe, and it's got Julianne Moore in it, and it's this really intense A24-esque horror movie about a suburban housewife who starts to feel like she starts getting ill, and she slowly becomes obsessed with the idea that the world and possibly chemicals are making her ill. It's phenomenal.
I can't ever watch it. It sounds so horrible.
This guy, so Todd Haynes has already made this movie as this kind of art house. He didn't make it as a horror movie, but when you watch it now, it's basically A24. They would be coming in their pants if they saw this. They'd be like, they would be able to market the fuck out of it. It would just do boffo box office. And then, like, what, 2 decades later, he makes the trad, boring, courtroom drama version of it with Mark Ruffalo. I just thought it was really weird. I don't know. That's all I thought watching it. Like, why have you made this movie? Paycheck?
I don't know. Maybe he felt passionate about it, but... And I think it tried. I remember watching it and thinking, this is trying to do the same thing that Spotlight did, but failing. You know,
didn't it precede Spotlight?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it didn't. Let's have a look. I think it Spotlight. Came out a year or two after Spotlight. I'm going to wrap a night.
Oh yeah, wrap your bow.
I'm going to wrap a nice, neat, and tidy bow around this episode by saying that what you said about the Wallace of Ballad Island at the beginning, which is that it's just a film doing exactly what it is supposed to do and not doing anything surprising, but executing incredibly well, that is Spotlight. That's Spotlight and Moneyball are two exemplary examples of exactly that genre. And the Wallace of Ballad Island, whilst more gentle, fits into that category, I would say. And that, my friend, is cyclical structure.
I don't think Moneyball does what you expect it to do.